Welcome to PS Let's Talk Love. I'm Marcia.
And I'm Solveig. We're communication professors and dating and relationship coaches. And in each episode, we'll be talking about dating, love, relationships, and all their complexities.
We're here to help you navigate the sometimes awful, sometimes exhilarating, and oftentimes bonkers elements of all things relationships.
We want to emphasize that this podcast is separate from our teaching and research at our university jobs. It is, however, part of our desire to bring dating and relationship support to folks everywhere.
Let's talk love. Hello, listeners. Welcome to episode 56. We always like to start our episodes with what we are loving this week. Solveig, what are you loving?
Well, I'm going to take us on a bit of a journey here for
a few minutes. Buckle up, everyone. Get your coffee, get your beverage of choice. Sit back.
Because what I'd actually like to start with is what I'm not loving, but don't worry, I'll bring it back to what I'm loving.
Okay. I mean, I like a good bitch sesh, so.
I feel like there's going to be some follow-up around this that we can talk about, but I'll just give you like the scoop. What I am not loving is relationships. Is not a shocker.
Romance. Yeah.
Yep. It's just a long time. So I'll come back to that in a minute.
Okay.
So not loving distance relationships. I only have one right now.
That would be a real turn of events if you're like, by the way, I'm in 12, so it's tough. Different time zones.
It's a lot of coordinating. No, there's really only one related to, let's see, how, and I'm also not loving organizing things. So I think some of you all know that, I don't know if we've talked about this recently, but I think if things go as planned, I'm going to go spend some time in Ireland this summer with my international lover turned boyfriend that I'm in a long distance relationship with. And I am getting ready to put my house on Airbnb for the summer, which means that I have decided to clean it. So this past weekend, I decided to start organizing the basement. And if anybody is really, really good at this, please let me know because I need your help. But I am not loving long distance relationships. I'm not loving cleaning the basement. However, cleaning the basement is the starting point of my getting ready, my house, getting ready for Airbnb. But in this process, I have been going through a bunch of stuff. In a lot of the writing that I have done about my past romantic relationships, I have learned a lot. I have learned so much. And so to bring this back around, while I'm not loving long distance relationships right now, I do feel like I'm learning new things about myself, and I am grateful for that. And in being able to also reflect on, you know, the stuff that I've written about past relationships and just think about it as I was cleaning my basement this weekend, I was like, wow, I have learned a lot, even for relationships, listeners, that I would say like clearly they didn't work out. I'm not still in them. And though I'm still like friends with some of those people, like didn't work out in a long-term committed relationship. I have learned a lot, and I do appreciate, and I know we talk about this a lot, but how much growth you can have yourself in being in different kinds of relationships of all sorts, not just romantic, but certainly romantic ones. So that's my journey.
Do you have like specific things that you're like looking back on now and be like, ooh, I don't do that anymore, or like I've moved on from that? Are there like specific things that you're able to reflect on?
That's a good question. I think a lot of it for me has been realizing my boundaries, like, and learning more boundaries around myself, which I am a work in progress. That's still something I continue to work on in my life. And, but I think, you know, looking back at a couple relationships, this is like random things I was looking at in my journal, right? So I didn't spend, I wanted to just stop and read all my journals. I didn't actually do that. I was just kind of flipping through. But I noticed a lot of my own growth around boundaries and what feels like I will accept in a relationship, like what I'm willing to accept in a romantic relationship, and where I'm like, okay, like I accept you as a human, but I don't choose this as a romantic relationship. I don't choose you as a partner. So, it was really interesting. Yeah. What was your question?
What if you had any specific, I mean, like with that, are there things that you, we've talked last year on this podcast about things like non-negotiables and oh my God, why can't I think of the other
deal breakers?
Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. Have you, like, now, if you're looking back on that, reflecting on your experiences in those relationships, do you have new things that you're like, oh wow, as a result of that, I now have these deal breakers or non-negotiables about my relationship? It sounds like that is the case. Are you able to identify any of them?
Yeah. Well, I'll just think of two things I was thinking about and like things I was looking at in my journals yesterday, one was around the idea that, I think for me, I'm best suited for someone who is able to find joy in situations pretty easily. And I think that is, I don't know if I'd call it a non-negotiable, but I might. Like, it's pretty important to me that I can be with somebody who is able to access their sense of joy more easily. That's one that's definitely like gone on my list from a previous relationship. And then I think the other one has been that if someone is really struggling in their mental health, that they need to be actively working on it. Like we all have things that we go through, and I understand that, but I need to see that there's like actively, you know, that they have a therapist, that they're working with someone, and ideally for me and a partner, someone who has done a lot of that work already. Mm-hmm. You know, I think new things are revealed to us throughout our lives. So I don't know that one can just say like, I want someone who's always mentally healthy. Cause like, yeah, that's a great idea, but like things happen in our lives, but yeah, someone who's working on it and willing to work on it.
Well, someone who has, like, if they have been dealing with something over the course of their life, it sounds like it's not like, oh, this one thing happened, right? And now I have trauma, or now I need to unpack it. It's like, no, you need to have done some of that work. If there is a history, especially, I imagine some of that, or I feel like some of that, I've been thinking about Love is Blind a lot because I've been watching the episodes. And I think that that also is like a reflection of age and maturity, right? Like, we are of the age now that, you know, a realistic match for the most part would be somebody of a similar age, right? Like, so, you know, between 35 and 45 or 35 and 50 or something along those lines. And the expectation is by the time you are that age, you have spent some time reflecting and dealt with those things in a way that, like, because you have had time to face those things in a way that you may not necessarily have had time to if you're 23, for example.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The expectation changes. Child.
Yeah. Especially with like childhood stuff. Like, it's interesting because I think just a couple episodes ago in Ted Lasso, we were talking about like Rebecca and Ted both like uncovering these things from their childhoods that they were still like working through. And I think sometimes that's the case. You repress something, you put it aside, and you don't want to look at it. But I would like to be in a relationship with someone who hopefully has been looking at it, or, you know, or is willing to in the situation, or, you know, again, cares about their mental health, I think, as a factor in their wellness.
Mm-hmm. And not being, what I heard from the first part of that is not being cynical. Somebody who can find joy in life pretty easily and access that, to me, sounds like not a particularly cynical person.
Yeah. And a person I was in relationship in the past really prided themselves on their, I don't know how to explain this exactly. And maybe some of you listening will relate to this, because I'm not trying to make it wrong. It just wasn't right for me. Mm-hmm. But they identified as a more melancholy person, and as we learned more about each other, it seemed like we really, where I thought we might be complementary in the sense that like, I tend to bring a lot of positivity and like energy in spaces I go in. I thought perhaps we could be complementary in those differences that we had, but it really ended up just being You know, maybe we could have worked through it, but it was really challenging for me to be with someone who was like, seemed pretty determined to like be more in their melancholy state.
I am going to go a little farther and say, I do think that that can be, I mean, look, everyone has different personalities and different ways of moving through the world. But I will say, as someone who has had several friends who I have really distanced myself from, because all that you encounter is cynicism and negativity at every stage, right?
It's kind of exhausting. It's
really exhausting for to be the person on the receiving end of that constantly. Again, people go through things, right? Like you're allowed to go have troubling times and all of that. But people who are like really determined to stay in a negative space and to always only look at the negative side of things, like I don't think it's healthy. And I think it really does drive people in your life away. It's really hard to be in that space all the time because it puts so much pressure on the other person to be uplifting, right? Like then you never get to be down. It's like impossible. There has to be somebody who's a little bit up. I don't know. I just think I will push on it a little bit and be like, meh, if like somebody I had a friend who I like approached her with that same thing of saying like, gosh, it just seems like you are really unhappy. I mean, I maybe said in a slightly nicer way, but probably not. And her response was, well, I just am more of a cynic. So that's just where I am. And I was like, okay, well, you're not very pleasant to be around. And we aren't, you know, we aren't particularly close anymore because it's too hard.
Yeah. And possibly, I mean, I guess I really tried to see his perspective. I think I don't know that he was fully cynical because I hear you in that. And I think that's also a really challenging. It can be really challenging as well. I think this was more like, I mean, we went round and round about this because I think we both grated on each other because I would be like, so, but tell me about the good thing that happened in your day. We cohabitated. So it was like, I would be like, but tell me about the good thing that happened in your day. And he would just be, I think he was like, this is grating. Kind of like, remember several episodes ago when we were talking about the everything goes my way thing. I think he was like, don't do that to me.
Yeah, that's fair.
Why are you doing that? And I'd be like, but you're such a bummer. And it just really didn't work. Just really, really didn't work. And we tried for a while to make it work. So yeah, I think those are a few things I've learned. And then, you know, just in the light of like, I think long distance relationships are challenging and full stop, and especially like over time trying to continue that. But I am really grateful for all of the things I feel like I'm learning, whatever comes next, whatever happens from this, you know, whether this is my lifelong partner or a period of time with a person, I think, I know I'm learning things about myself right now too, but I am just like, oh my gosh, like, okay, it's still like 2 more months before we see one another again. We've talked about almost everything I can think of to talk about. We've been trying to play games. We've been like trying to do all the things. I'm just over it in this particular moment.
Yeah,
not I mean, over him, but over it.
Well, I mean, I imagine, and you can cut this part if you want. We can cut this part. I guess I'm editing. I can cut this part if you want. I think that maybe one of the things that might be particularly challenging in your case is when we look at what tends to be successful when it comes to long distance relationships, is there is a clear end date in Dustin and I did long distance, but we knew it was 1 year. Like he was going to be done, you know, in June of the next year. And I think then you at least go, okay, well, this is temporary. And I think the way that it is right now for you guys, it's not as, it sort of is like, is just infinity. And that is so much harder. I mean, I know you're going to see each other, but like the actual relationship becoming non-long distance, there is no set opportunity for that.
Yeah, not yet. I think that's what we're working towards, is like, is that our next choice? And if that is our next choice, that means one of us has to make a big decision in their life about leaving and going to where the other person is. And I think that's like where we're at right now. It's like, okay, so you know, we know that as of right now, the plan is for me to go spend some time there this summer, and I'm really fortunate. And then I have a teaching schedule where I cannot teach in the summers and, you know, spend some time somewhere else. Like I'm making that work and we're making that work, but you know, who is going to, if are we ready to make the call about one of us being in the other person's place? And if so, that's a really big move for the other person. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's giving up your whole life.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think there's a, I think we're both probably in the place. I was listening to a Gottman Institute podcast interview this weekend as well, while I was cleaning. I was thinking a lot about relationships and cleaning. And they were talking about, like, when you're beyond sort of that honeymoon experience with somebody and, like, just building trust, like that stage of building trust with somebody. And I think we're in that place of, like, building trust and figuring out, do we have enough trust between one another that it is worth this, you know, whatever that next move would be, and who's going to do it. So big questions.
Right. Do you guys have a time, like, have you decided, like, they're like at X time, we are going to make this call, like, one way or another? Yeah, have you guys gotten to that?
I mean, as of right now, our plan is to make that decision after I'm there for the summer, that we're going to try. I mean, it's a temporary cohabitation, but we'll be, you know, I'd be living in his place this summer, for 2 months, which is not that long, but I think it's long enough for us to get a feel for, like, how do we live together? And is this something we want to do? So I think we've actually said, though we're trying not to, like, it does feel like a lot of pressure, but I think we both said that, like, by the end of the summer, we'll have a plan in place for, like, what's happening next.
I think that, I mean, that makes sense. Like, it's time, right? It's time to, like, have some sort of, like, deadlines are important. I know deadlines sound so formal for a relationship, but, like, in this case, right, you do have to have, sometimes you have to schedule that type of thing, right? You can't just go off of feel. Unfortunately, like, that's the crappy thing about long distance relationships, is at some point a decision has to be made.
Yeah. Well, I know that I don't want an indefinite long distance relationship. I'm pretty sure he doesn't either, but I'm very clear on it. So it's like, okay, what's happening next? I think it's getting harder to go in these times in between seeing one another. I think we're both losing a bit of patience around that, or maybe, you know, so we'll see.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. That was a lot. That was the journey. What are you loving this week?
Well, mine is it's a little more Ted Lasso related, I suppose. Ooh. In that it is about sport. So it has been a month of March Madness, which, listeners, if you know what that is, it's like the college basketball large tournament is March Madness. Yes, giant tournament, single elimination. So there's been lots of games going on. The women's championship was Saturday. And it was a huge game. It was a pretty significant, women's college basketball actually tends to do pretty well. Like, it's pretty well attended and well watched, especially this tournament. It was a particularly, like, significant time for women's basketball, I think, because there are, like, some really major players that are currently in college. And one of them is, oh my God, I had her name written down now, Caitlin Clark, who is at Iowa and who will be there next year. And, like, she's doing, like, triple doubles, which double digit points, rebounds, and assists. She hit, I think, 41 points the other day. Like, she is, like, a generational player. Also has some pageantry. And, like, I think that's actually kind of what I wanted to talk about a little bit more with this, is you're seeing now there's been this huge shift in college basketball. And some people might know about this, some people might not, where they can receive money. So for a long time, anyone who is part of the NCAA, like, you weren't, the only money you got was your scholarship.
Okay.
So, and when it comes to these large schools, like, there's a lot of money being made off of things like this tournament. To remain amateur status, they had to not, like, they couldn't accept endorsements. They couldn't do anything like that. The players couldn't. And there was a shift in the last 2 years. I can't remember exactly when. It's been maybe a year or two. And now they can. And so one of the kind of interesting things that I see happening is the players, like, can promote themselves as more like their personalities will help them get endorsements and things like that in a way that like we saw more in professional sports.
And I think it's
particularly it was significant for women's sports because when it comes to women in professional sports, like they very rarely have much opportunity. Like they have to go get a job when they retire from professional sports, right? Abby Wambach has talked about that at length. And she was like one of the greatest, right? She was like top of her sport, elite. So anyway, I watched the game on Saturday. It was a great game. And there was a lot of trash talking, and listeners might have seen some of the commentary around it in the, I've seen it on social media a bunch. There's been a lot of discussion there, which is complicated for many reasons. I don't think we really have time to get into all of it on here today. Mostly I'm just loving that like women get to be highlighted being competitors and athletes, and they get to be kind of messy and they get to be assholes, and that, which is part of the game, and they're being recognized for those efforts. So that was a convoluted, I'm loving it, but I don't know. It's just been really.
Can I just ask, when you described that I think you were describing one player or maybe multiple players playing with more pageantry. Can you explain what you mean?
Yeah. So like on Ted Lasso, you notice how like Jamie Tart will like look at the stands and like point to himself or like get the crowd going, or like maybe like they'll like react to other players and you can see them clearly doing some trash talk, or like they hit, you know, in basketball, like she hits a three and like has something, like has celebration, right? Like they're, which is part of the game, right? Like we see that in men's sports all the time, but seeing women getting to do that a little bit more and being celebrated for that is what I think is significant. And that has happened to some degree in the past, but like really significantly, I think, in this round. So a little bit more. I don't know how else to describe it.
I get that. Yes. As a person who doesn't watch as many sports, I was like, I feel like I need you to break this down for me. Does it make you miss playing basketball when you watch basketball like that? How do you feel about it? Do you feel nostalgic?
I do. I went to the high school games here in town, the state tournament a couple weeks ago too. And I very much relate to Roy Kent when like there's that one episode where he's like, I miss all of it. And I'm like, that's how I feel kind of too. Like I don't, it's really, really hard to describe. And I think that's why I relate so heavily to that character in this show, because it's this like, it's so much your life. And it's such a like very specific experience to like be a part of a team like that, and the routine of it, and like having people cheer for you. and I mean, obviously I was like nowhere near the level that like Roy Kent or even these women playing D1 ball are, but I do miss like I think there's this camaraderie element, and there's like something about, you have like X amount of time to like put into play everything you've practiced, and like sometimes you do it and sometimes you don't, and like sometimes you can't control that, and there is something about physically like putting your whole body on the line that is really exhilarating. There is a part of me that sometimes misses like some of that, and then I'm like, oh, should I coach? No, that's too much, like I don't have time. I have no time. That's too much of a commitment. So I don't know, complicated feelings about it for sure.
I imagine also it's like, speaking of just like sort of the Roy Kent situation right now that we've been talking about, also like it must, correct me if this is not the way it feels, but like to have had it be such a significant part of your identity for like a chunk of your life, and then to be like, that's not my identity now. And I know it's been a long time. It's not fresh for you that's a different thing, but do you notice that at all?
Yeah. I mean, I think I've moved through that because it's been so long, right? Like it's been 20 years since I was in high school. I mean, I played in college, but you know, so it's been, I don't know what, like 16 years since I played competitively like that. And it's super hard at the time. It is kind of weird now to be like, oh, this was like, especially watching the high school games, it was kind of funny because I'm like, oh, it seemed so important at the time, right? Like I felt like you kind of felt like a superstar. And then like to be back there and I'm like, yeah, like it's important, but also it's not that important. Like it is just a game, but it is kind of funny to be like, oh, I remember feeling like such a, like this was, I don't know. It was such a big part of my identity. I don't miss that part of it. I like being a little bit more nuanced of a person.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I figured it is just interesting to think about all the different experiences that we have in our lives and like the different things that we devote our time to for a big chunk of time. And it's interesting when people, you know, there's probably people, if you don't tell them, they would never know that about you, right? Like you have to like tell them that that was a part of your life.
Right. It is kind of funny now, like sometimes I'll say something and they'll be like, oh, like you like actually played in college. And I was like, oh yeah. And it was like a big part of my life. Like I traveled every summer for like 6 years to play in national tournaments and played with like all these players, several players who did go D1. And it was such a significant part of my life. Yeah. It's funny when I meet somebody new, they don't typically like, why would you know that?
Yeah. I mean, they might be like, you're tall, like whatever the stereotype of like, you're tall. Did you play sports? But you know.
Well, and then if they're a dude, then there's like a very weird conversation. I'll be like, yeah, I'll play ball in college. And they're like, I bet I could beat you. And I'm like, I hate you. And no, you couldn't.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway. Okay. All right. Well, should we get into Ted Lasso? We should get into it.
Okay, so today we're going to be looking at season 2, episode 11 called Midnight Train to Royston, if you're looking for it. It's just a quick recap of the episode. We get to really see some people rocking it in this episode. Sam's rocking it. So is Keely. We see this at the beginning. Dr. Sharon is leaving. One of the main focuses of this episode is Edwin Akufu, a billionaire from Ghana, coming to visit Richmond. We don't know why at first, but then we learn that he wants to bring Sam to play for a team in Africa that he's buying. And he's seeking to impress Sam by taking him on a day out. In the meantime, of course, Rebecca is feeling complex feelings about that with the possibility of Sam leaving, and Keely's getting recognition for her work. There are some super awkward moments between Nate and Roy and Keely. Dr. Sharon tries to leave without saying goodbye, but Ted goes after her. We learn at the end of this episode that Trent Krim has written a news story that's about to be published about Ted's panic attack, and Trent lets him know that his anonymous source was Nate. So those seem like the biggest sort of things that are happening in this episode. When we were thinking about what we wanted to look at in this episode and a theme around it, we were thinking about the idea of dreaming big and going for it, which we're going to talk about quite a bit today. Do you want to contextualize that at all, Marcia?
We thought about it in terms of Keely's speech when she's talking to Nate, where she's like thinking about or talking to him about how like they're kind of the underdogs and no one expects them to have those big dreams, and that like they don't necessarily always have the confidence to do it, but that, you know, they do have those big dreams and they are underestimated, but sometimes you just have to go for it. I think that like we kind of see different people at different stages of that decision throughout this episode, starting with maybe Sam, and who's kind of the main storyline in this episode.
Oh, love Sam. Love Sam. Even when this episode started again, watching it, I was like, I'm so glad that we just get to spend some time with Sam. For as much as I don't enjoy Nate, like, let's spend time with Sam. Yeah.
There's a reason my dog's named after Sam Obisanya.
Yeah, he's great. So, yeah, I mean, we see, I mean, kind of also, I don't know if we would call Sam an underdog, but just speaking to that, like he wasn't, you know, in the first season, he wasn't really fully recognized, it seems like, for what he contributed to the team. And it seems like this episode opens with him, and even this season, we see Sam really coming into his own. And especially at the beginning of this episode, you know, we see that Sam's doing really well for the team and being put even further into sort of this leadership position, it seems.
Well, he was underperforming, right? Like, that's what we know when we came in to the season, is Ted was told he's underperforming. And then now to see him with a hat trick, and like he has his own chant now, like he is thriving in his position on the team. He's like, he also has like a hot lady that he has been hooking up with.
Yeah, he's got a lot of good things happening. And that's being recognized outside of Richmond, right? We see that pretty quickly with Edwin Akufu's arrival onto the scene, where, you know, at first they don't know why he's there, but it turns out he's there to try to get Sam to come to his team, right? The team that he hasn't even bought yet.
And boy, does he woo him.
Yes, he does.
This man woos him in all the ways. And really, like, I think as I was watching this, I thought it was interesting how I was thinking of the psychology behind this, right? Like, Edwin knew what would speak to Sam. Like, he's talking to him about like his connection to his roots and like being connected to Africa and the work that he did to prevent the like environmental crisis issues in Nigeria. And he's, you know, he's saying all the things, right? Like, it's so intoxicating when somebody tells you all the right things. It makes me think of like in dating situations, how he's like, I'm a billionaire who doesn't believe billionaires should exist, right? Like, he's preemptively addressing any negative like thought or feeling Sam might had. I was like, oh, the art of persuasion here. This guy is doing all the things.
Yeah, agreed. And alongside that, there's sort of this weird other energy of like the museum being, you know, only actors in it, and the restaurant not actually being a restaurant. I could kind of, have you ever had an experience like that where you feel like someone's trying to impress you with something, but it feels almost a little bit false? Like that was coming up for me a bit.
Well, it's all a facade.
Yes.
And I mean, for me, that like, as someone who I think like one of my most core values is authenticity. And I mean, I don't know that anyone likes feeling like they're being lied to. I don't think, like, you know, nobody's like, yes, somebody's lying. But I feel like for me personally, it's like people being genuine is particularly important. And so it does feel, I mean, that's a good point, that it's like all this facade and he is lying to him. And I think It makes it hard to trust someone.
Yeah.
I mean, Sam is like, I think a little intoxicated with all of it, mm-hmm. because of course he is. He's mm-hmm. saying all the right things. But I think like, if we're thinking about what's the other side of this, it's like, how do you trust someone who is lying to you?
Yeah. And then keeps disclosing that he's lying, mm-hmm. kind of for ultimately for, yeah, just as a weird, it's not just like you said, he's very much wooing Sam with all of these good things, but then there's a part that just feels not quite right about all of it. That we can't, I don't know, I can't fully put my finger on at that point, other than I think the facade, like you said, and the part. But I mean, understandably, as I think any of us who might be in Sam's situation might be, like, we can see in this episode Sam considering, like, wow, this is a pretty interesting offer. Like, what do I think of this? Right? Talking with his dad, like, clearly we see a few scenes, right, of him walking and thinking about what he wants to do.
Right. I mean, he's sort of at a crossroads where he now has to go like, basically, like, what is my dream? And is agreeing to go do this, like, which is admittedly making like a very big leap and putting a lot of faith in someone that has been, I guess, technically lying to you off and on throughout the afternoon.
Yeah.
And him kind of wrestling with that. And then like the added complication of leaving the team means like leaving any potential for a relationship with Rebecca too. Like there's two things that he has to be considering. And it is, it's a big, like, I think it's, I read him walking around and like kind of daydreaming about all of this as being the like, okay, what is my big dream? Like, what is the thing that I want to go for? And yeah. I mean, what Edwin is saying is very intoxicating. I know I've used that word a bunch, but like, that's all I can think about is it's like so appealing to be wanted like that.
Totally. Very tempting. Very, very tempting. Mm-hmm. We see Rebecca. I think we're going to talk about this a little bit, but we see a scene, you know, where Rebecca stops by his house and basically says, you know, she can't tell him one way or another, but she wants him to stay. And that feeling like something that seems important. It seems like an important beat for Sam that I think it's important that she's sitting waiting outside his house.
Yeah. Well, especially, I mean, we didn't mention this, but the episode opens with him scoring that hat trick and then he is alone in his car. Okay. And I thought that was an interesting scene where like, you know, he was like he had the whole stadium chanting his name. And then goes from that to like the quiet of his car all alone, which by the way, he was driving a Tesla because of course Sam is environmentally conscious. Mm-hmm. And he was looking at the text messages from between him and Rebecca. And I noticed, I paused it to read what he had said.
Uh-huh.
What before. Did you say? And the thing he had said before was like, you know, if you want to, basically, I didn't write it down, but he said he'd like to see her again, but no pressure. And then she hadn't responded to that. And then the next thing she said was like, hey, great job. Have a good night. Mm-hmm. Right. Like mm-hmm. She's not responsive to him wanting to get together. Mm-hmm. She just like blows it off a little bit. So it's pretty significant for then her to show up and be like, hey, I want you to stay. I think like that shows kind of the, I don't know, that I'm sure that makes it harder for him.
Yeah, I'm sure. Right. I mean, he's like, I just went for it with you.
Yeah.
And she's not quite ready. Anyways, we can talk about Rebecca a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, so Sam does feel, I guess we don't actually know. I'm just like thinking, no. I was like, wait, do we know? We don't really know by the end of this episode. We don't really know what he's going to do. We see him sort of wrestling with what he's going to go for next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What does it mean to be big?
Yeah.
Or dream big? Yeah. So Sam is like an ellipsis. His story ends in an ellipsis, yes. Not a period.
Dot, dot, dot. Dot, dot, dot. Oh, Rebecca. Do we want to talk about Rebecca at all?
Yeah. Well, she's kind of connected to Sam. I think her storyline is a lot smaller in this episode. I feel like, I mean, for me watching Rebecca this episode, like, it's one interesting that this billionaire comes in and prepares to offer a lot of money. Cause all I had been thinking in the back of my head is like, how is this team financially afloat? Mm-hmm. They like lost a major sponsor. They're in the Championship League, not in the Premier League, which means they get less money, but they have the same players. How are they doing that? So it seems like this guy is like the answer to her problems. Mm. And so I do think that they don't explicitly call this out, but I kept thinking like, I mean, she has to consider her financial responsibility to the board that she has and stuff, right? Like,
yeah,
that is, I mean, that's the reality of being in that kind of position. So I just thought that was interesting. They don't actually mention that. And I'm like, could she get in trouble for this? For telling him to stay?
It
Are
is
we just
going
to not address it?
Yeah, that's interesting because they don't emphasize that very much other than to say that this guy might be coming to buy the team, that this billionaire, but I suppose any soccer football fan in here who probably knows way more about this than I do is probably cursing my name as I say this, but I suppose these conversations happen a lot where you're trying to figure out who's going to buy the team and who, I mean, that seems to happen from what little I understand, it seems to happen a lot that the ownership changes and, you know, there's all these
different kinds of billionaires who are investing in football teams. That's all I've got about that. Anyways, do you pay attention to that? I guess it happens a lot.
I would like a storyline where Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney buy Richmond instead of just Wrexham.
Totally. Maybe season three will give us that. Who knows?
I know. I keep being like, they've got a show. They do mention them in season two. But
yeah.
Yeah. Like, can't funny. We see those guys? They were just over there. Yeah, I mean, I was just in terms of thinking about like dreaming big and you know, going for it. For Rebecca, clearly it's not going big for her, and dreaming big right now is not about the football club. It is, her focus is on, I think, her quest journey, maybe not quest, journey to find like love and to be vulnerable. I think that that has been her storyline. Mm-hmm. This whole show is like her path back to being like a full human post-divorce and recovering from that horrible relationship and being willing and able to put herself out there and be vulnerable. That seems to be her, like, that's her path. That's mm-hmm. She's moving through the dark forest still.
Yeah, I guess I'm only pausing too because I think it seems like right now, with the decision that she made with Sam, at least as best I can understand why she's making it, it's also like her own, like and I'm speaking to in the last episode when she said she couldn't see him right now and she needed to, like, you know, be with herself. It seems like, yeah, part of her storyline or her path is to, like, make sure that she's good with herself before stepping into something new. Also, it's at least that seems like mm-hmm. also what's happening, which is maybe part of why she also decides to talk to Ted. I mean, she does really go for it in, like, mm-hmm. deciding to tell Ted about this thing that, again, speaking of things that are sort of like probably a bigger deal than the show makes them, like, it's kind of she is an owner who is hooking up with one of her players. I mean, there's a major age difference. There's a major, which, I mean, I think we're cheering her on in that, but also there's a power differential that in other situations, and also probably this one would be problematic.
I think so, right? I mean, the thing is I'm like, oh, I love them both, but I want them to be happy, right? Like, there's that side of my brain, but the other side is like, if the roles were reversed, if Rebecca was a dude and mm-hmm. Sam was a woman, I would be way more uncomfortable with this.
Yeah,
dynamic.
If whether Sam was a woman or a man, if it was a dude, we'd probably feel if Rebecca was a dude.
If Rebecca was a dude, actually, yeah, full stop.
Like, ooh, like, is this okay? What, like, is it okay that this power difference is there? Like, I think we would be mm-hmm. questioning it a bit more. And that's not really, like, I don't know, at least my response to the show has mostly been like, yay, Rebecca.
I know.
So it's kind of a big deal that she's confessing it to Ted, you know, that she's working mm-hmm. through her feelings about, like, what and knows that, like, it's not okay for her to tell Sam what to do in this situation. Like, she can't really tell Sam what to do in this situation.
Right. I do think that telling Ted, I mean, there's a part of me that's like, I guess it is like she's going for it and telling someone other yeah. than her very close girlfriends. The other part of me, as Ted points out, is the last time she went and confessed something to him, he like was like, hey, no problem. And like, right when she confessed that she brought him there just as like basically a way to ruin the football club.
Yeah.
He forgave her immediately. I just, part of me is like, telling Ted is like the lowest stakes person because okay. he is going to be kind and supportive, like, right? Like, I cannot, correct me if I'm wrong, but I can't think of a time when somebody has told him something and he has done anything but be like generally supportive.
Mm-hmm. I can't think of anything. I mean, he's a really, I was reminded about what a good listener he is in this scene with mm-hmm. the two of them. I mean, he really does listen to her and sort of validate her various perspectives for herself, you know, like he's like, that makes sense and that makes sense and okay, this is where you're at. And he seems like he's really listening well. So yeah, I hear you, and that maybe it's not really, really going for it because it's Ted, but she is sharing a complicated feeling she has.
Yes. And I think that that is her being vulnerable. I will agree that has been her, like, her area of growth is mm-hmm. becoming more vulnerable in different places and in different ways. I mean, do I think that perhaps she could benefit from going and talking to Dr. Sharon? I do.
Yes.
No, yes, she's like the only one who didn't.
Good call. That is such a good point. Yeah. Yeah. I think she could be using some outside support for sure, especially in the situation with Sam, who it seems like is a, you know, pretty, they seem like a pretty amazing connection. It's like, mm-hmm. I'm like, don't blow it, Rebecca, but also this is complicated. And I mean, she does go, like we were talking about earlier, she does then go and wait for Sam. Did you wonder how long she was waiting for? Because I always think that, like, how long do you wait outside someone's house?
Yeah. And also, she was in like tabloids with her divorce with Rupert, because that's the other component of it. And I'm always like, oh, right. These people are like extremely famous.
Yeah, good call.
Because they're so wealthy and they're like, you know, in these famous social circles. So like that alone was a risk, her mm-hmm. hanging out outside his house like that. Yes. And I also am like, for how long? Couldn't she have called him?
I know. Did she text and say? It didn't seem like it. I don't know. I was just thinking, I always think whenever I see that point scene, like, how long would I wait for somebody? How long would I wait outside their house in the cold and dark?
I would not wait long. I'd fall asleep probably.
I mean, it's dark when he comes home.
I know. I mean, we are, in fairness, we do live in Alaska where it's either dark all the time or dark only from like 2 to 3 in the morning. So this could be, it could have, the sun could have just set.
That's true. in any case, she goes for it with Sam as well, right? She says that she can't tell him what to do, but she doesn't want him to go.
Mm-hmm. Right. So dot dot dot.
Dot dot dot.
I wanna say when Ted points out, like, this is the second year in a row that at about this time you've come down here and had a major confession. I'm like, oh, what's the confession gonna be this year?
I definitely thought the same thing. Yeah.
I was like, is it gonna be that she loves Ted? Like, are they endgame? I'm like, I'm just so curious if the show does that.
I don't think that's gonna happen.
I don't either, but
I don't think they're romantic soulmates. It feels
weird. I don't either, but like a lot of people do.
Well, those people are wrong.
Maybe it's that her and Sam have gotten married.
Maybe she's pregnant. Eloped.
Maybe. She doesn't seem to be like pining over. Maybe though. Maybe.
I don't know. Rupert had a baby. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm just that's thinking true.
What kind of thing? Who knows? Yeah. Who knows?
It's that her and Beard are in love.
That I would not see coming.
Maybe it's that her and Keely end up romantically
together.
And they adopt a baby.
That seems more plausible. And then you can still have a baby Bjorn, because maybe Roy will be
their sperm donor.
Yeah, exactly. I don't. Who knows?
Roy, Keely, and Rebecca become a throuple.
There we go.
Going off of the rails a little bit.
Who knows? If you're watching season 3, hopefully this means something to you too. But we're on season 2 still. So what about Keely?
Yes.
What about Keely? So,
Keely is being featured in Vogue. Is it Vogue? Vanity Fair?
I forgot. Some fancy fashion magazine. I thought they said British Vogue.
It probably is. I did not write that down.
I did not either.
It was a big, important magazine. Yes, that we respect, clearly, because we wrote it down. And she's being highlighted for like women, kind of like a women in business type thing, for the work that she has been doing for Richmond in mm-hmm. all of their like PR and marketing stuff. Mm-hmm. And this is a departure for Keely. I think I know that the first time I watched this episode, I was like, why is she so nervous? Because I feel like she's just like a part of the team and so good at what she does. And it took me a minute to remember like what her path has been professionally in the time that we have been paying attention to her, where like she started as just this like sort of like a it girl model,
influencer model. Yeah.
And now she is like very much, it seems to be quite powerful and good at her job. And now she is getting recognized for that in a national way.
Yeah. And I mean, she's really like, we're kind of seeing her. We've been watching her go for it. Like we've been watching her go for it. And we're seeing that more and more. We see her get ready, like trying to figure out her outfits. And before the show, right, we'll talk about maybe, is there anything you want to talk about what her and Nate's interaction in the suit shop?
I did appreciate how we got a little bit of her backstory in that. Like she's talking about like my mom, like worked under a dude and he always took credit. And so I was like, I'm going to do a different path. And I did this. And then she was sort of floating and is now like, hey, like I actually do have like dreams. And I didn't even know I wanted to be a boss, but then I met Rebecca and like the power of mentorship, like it was a real interesting journey to hear like how her perspective has changed. Like we knew she respected Rebecca and she loves her and they have this great friendship connection, right? Like in some ways they're soulmates, but then to like not only hear that part of it, but the way that professionally she has been inspired by Rebecca. I thought that that was a really interesting piece of Keely's story.
Yeah, agreed. And we see her, it's so interesting because in the suit shop, she's so, appears to be so confident in her interaction. And then it's interesting to see, you know, one of the next times we see her at home looking so, so, I don't know. This scene still kind of confuses me a little bit, but so uncomfortable or nervous or whatever, or if it's anxiety, like whatever's going on for her. It's like, I mean, I she does talk about, you know, the vulnerability. It's interesting, right? Cause she's this person who's been photographed a lot. It sounds like she's been photographed naked a lot. Do we know that? Like,
yeah, it seems that.
So, you know, keeping her top on, you know, she makes a joke about keeping her top on. And so it's interesting the ways that we end up feeling vulnerable, I guess, is one of the things I think about that. What do you think of, what do you make of that scene?
It was interesting to me because I feel like we haven't really seen that part of Keely's like insecurity yet up until now. I mean, there was a little moment with her and Rebecca at some point where she's like, are you only giving me a job because I was nice to you in the loo or whatever? And, but after that, she kind of just is like, well, I have the job, so I'm going to do it. And it seemed like she was really leading with confidence. And so it is interesting. I can see how, up until this point, she has sort of been, I think the difference here is right now she has been part of this team, right? Like she's the PR marketing. I don't know exactly what her role is there, but whatever it is, but she's part of the team, right? She's one of however many. And now, and in the past, she had been photographed for doing things, but it was just about her outward. She was just a vessel for whatever product they were trying to sell. It was all superficial. She's all done up. There's all the costumes, right? Like I'm thinking of that scene with her and Ted when she's like dressed up like a lion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then like, I think she's coming to the realization that it's really scary to put into the world what you actually want. Like, what are your actual professional goals and dreams and aspirations? Because when you put that out for other people to see, and she's all on her own in this, right? It's not her and the team, it's just her. That is, then you're it's not you're responsible, but like you're kind of held to that standard. Like people are going to ask. And if she doesn't live up to those dreams, like that can be embarrassing and it's vulnerability. It's disclosing that stuff to this really wide audience. And I think that that is way more terrifying than having your tits out.
I don't know. I think the fear are equally terrifying personally. Yeah. Yeah. So we see her, you know, and then she really seems to, I mean, at least for part of the photo shoot, it seems like she really does go for it. She goes for it. She does what she knows how to, I mean, that woman knows how to model. It looks like she knows how to pose for a photo. I was thinking about that. I don't know how many photo shoots you've had, Marcia, but I'm very awkward in photo shoots. And I was like, oh, Keely knows what to do. She knows how to stand. She's clearly a professional at that. And it seems like she's just stepping into her big dream. So yeah, it's neat to see.
Yeah. I mean, in fairness, that was just her being photographed. I would be more interested in having seen the actual interview take place.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems like Roy's pep talk, like he really saw her.
Yes,
and
he did.
Gave her a really excellent, you know, like I said, he saw her and he reflected her fears and also reassured her, which is what you want a solid partner to do. Roy Kent.
So dreamy. I know, he does really see her in that moment. That's beautiful. Anything else you want to say about Keely right now, or should we talk about Nate?
Well, do you want to talk about that scene at the end with Keely and Roy about the disclosures?
Yeah, I guess they're going for it in that too. I don't know. Yes, I was trying to think about how that fits in. What are you thinking?
I mean, they're making the decision to be really open and honest and like,
it's true,
very vulnerable with sharing those things. I actually thought Roy's was particularly interesting because the Nate thing with Keely was not, she had nothing, there was nothing she did.
Yeah.
And I didn't think that that was, like, I didn't think it was going to be a big deal either. It clearly wasn't. I like that Roy just was like, that must have been so awkward.
I know. I really liked his response to that as well.
Yeah. I mean, it just shows like their rapport. I thought that his revelation about that whole thing with the teacher, and I thought that that was interesting. And I think where I place him, I know we don't really have much to talk about with him, but where I place him in terms of like going for it and dreaming big, I kind of felt like when the teacher asked him, are you married? And he said, no, like he had a look on his face that I'm like, is he going like, why aren't we? Like, what are we doing? Yeah. Like, what is this?
Yeah.
And so I kind of think like he's in a weird way, sort of in a similar place as Sam, of like trying to figure out like, what am I going to do? Like, what is the big dream and how do I go for it? And like, isn't quite sure how.
Yeah, I appreciate that, because that scene, I've watched it several times and I'm always like, what is happening between them? They look so uncomfortable, you know, and she says that Jamie said he loved her and they look so uncomfortable. But this time when I watched it, I was thinking, along the similar lines as what you just said, that like, there are these moments, I feel like, when you are not totally, like, you know, they aren't engaged yet, they're still, as you pointed out many times, we don't know that either of them have had a healthy relationship that's lasted this long. Like, there's these new moments where like weird things happen like that, where you sort of question, I'm thinking especially for Roy, like, oh, like, I'm okay, no, I'm not married, but what do I, and this, you know, it seems like on some level that teacher is attractive and she's nice and she's having a conversation. There's like these moments of like, am I really, I guess, am I really going for it? Am I really going to do this with this person, or am I not? I think, you know, and, or am I not? And it kind of seems like that is one of those moments. It just, I think it's so easy to think about like romantic relationship and dating and like, they seem so happy and they seem so good. I kind of appreciate being able to see a moment where they have a little bit of disharmony for whatever reason. Even if they are ultimately, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with them, but I think they're going to end up together. I'm just going to vote for them ending up together. And even if we don't know, like, it just, yeah, it's an interesting thing to illustrate in that moment, and uncomfortable. I feel uncomfortable.
Well, the show is so good at making us like feel the emotions of a relationship, right? Like, there is discomfort. There are moments where you're questioning like, what am I doing and why am I doing this and what is the path forward here? And I always think it's most interesting when there's nuance. It's not like, in this case, right, they both reveal some things, and it's not like either of them did anything horrible.
Mm-mm.
But it is like, okay, this is making us step back and go like, what is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I think, with Keely's revelation about Jamie at the end. And Roy's clearly didn't love that.
Yeah, he was understandably unimpressed by that.
Yeah, I mean, I think about it and I'm like, that's her waiting to tell him that, I think, is the tough spot here,
mm-hmm.
too, right? Like, and I don't know exactly how long it's been. I don't know if we do know how long it's been since then, but it's been at least a few days,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
probably at least a week.
It's interesting to be in those situations where, you know, I mean, that's clearly a path that she's gone down and she could go down again.
Mm-hmm. I hope not.
We'll see.
I mean, I love Jamie Tart for other reasons, but not for Keely. Yeah, they also kind of end on an ellipse.
Dot, dot, dot.
Dot, dot, dot. I will say that I've seen this episode a few times, and that last scene, the very first time I saw it, I was like, what the fuck did they just do? And the more I watch it, the more I'm like, oh, I think it's him being betrayed by Jamie that he's reacting to.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Thinking about it in context of what recently happened with him hugging Jamie and like right. them getting to this good place, I do wonder if it's more, I read it first as betrayal, like Keely didn't tell me. Mm-hmm. And I'm like upset by that. But I now am reading it as like, I can't believe like he did that to me. I thought we were in a good place. Like that's what I'm choosing anyway.
Yeah. 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 I can see that. I can see that. I definitely just read it as them both just being like, okay, what are we actually doing?
Yeah. Lots of information. Anyway, dot, dot, dot on to Nate. Fucking Nate. Fuck you, Nate. That's what I have to say. I'm sure Nate will probably get some beautiful redemption story at some point that makes me cry, but right now is not that day.
Right now, I don't feel that way. I mean, yeah, Nate's just kind of, he just continues to kind of suck. I mean, we see at the beginning, speaking of, are you going for it or not? We see, and it's not shocking, I think, at this point, that Nate's like, talking to Roy and Beard and being like, do you two ever want some of the credit? Like, I'm getting, we see him really have some vitriol towards Ted in this situation, right? Like, here I am, I'm telling him my ideas and he's going to take them and he's going to take credit for them. Like, it seems misplaced.
Totally. Especially because Ted is actually quite good at giving people credit. We've seen him do that throughout this show repeatedly, specifically about Nate.
Yeah.
He has given Nate credit. I also thought that that was kind of fun. Maybe not fun. Interesting how both Beard and Roy are like, yeah, that's the job. We're assistant coaches. Like, the head coach gets all the blame and they get all of the praise. Like, that's the deal. When you're an assistant coach, you get protected, but you also don't get as much credit. It's just how it works. Like, that's the job. That's the role. And Nate just does not seem to be willing to accept that role. He's clearly not getting something that he needs.
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
Ugh. Yeah.
He's being a real dickhole about it.
And then like the next scene is so creepy where he's just like, I mean, it's funny because Nate starts off sort of to me as this sweet character. Like I'm finding him endearing, but when he's like waiting for Keely in her office, I'm like, why are you doing that? Like, it's a little, don't wait in her office with the lights off. Right. With the lights off too. Like, don't do that. That's weird, Nate. Stop.
Yeah. It's scary.
Yeah.
It's scary. Creepy. It's creepy. Yeah. And also, could he not text her? Again, just like Rebecca, just a text would probably, or a call.
Right. Yeah. So I'm already like not feeling it with Nate for him mm-hmm. waiting. But, you know, he asks. And I mean, Keely is probably a great person to ask to go suit shopping. Do you think he had some sort of ulterior motive? Like, like, what happens next? Do you think he had it planned, or did it all just like happen? We know he plans things and then pretends they're surprises.
That's true. I had not thought about that part of it. I kind of felt like he hadn't planned. I thought that he's been infantilized several times now about the suit that Ted got him, right? Like, right. There have been several comments, and he just had another comment about it and is like all triggered. And Keely has always been kind to him and supportive. She helped him with building confidence that really mm-hmm. has backfired. Mm-hmm. And I kind of see it as Keely just like being somebody he thinks of as a safe person to talk to. Although yeah. I guess thinking about it, he did say when Roy and Keely were first getting together, he's like, she's just so wonderful to be liked by a person like that. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't.
Yeah. I don't know if he was yeah. planning it. I just, it did think of it. Like as I was thinking about him going for it, like, I mean, he can't possibly think it's going to work between them, but anyways, I mean, he didn't have this, huh?
It seems like he did. I don't know.
I mean, they have this moment like this, the, you know, they have, it seems like a pretty sweet moment between them where they're talking, like you said, at the beginning of this episode that where they're talking at the suit shop, he's trying on suits. She's, you know, they're being buddies. It seems like they're being buddies and it's a sweet moment and they're talking. And I mean, the way that it's filmed and everything, it does seem like she's very close, but the way she does it kind of looks like something she does all the time. It looks like, it doesn't look like she's doing anything that's uncomfortable for her to be like fixing his, you know, his suit for him or his shirt and his tie.
No. And it's, I mean, and that's an appropriate level of closeness if that's what you're doing. And the whole point is she's there helping him pick out a suit, right? The context yeah. is like, yeah, of course. And also in her mind, they're buds.
Yeah.
Like they're pals. Yeah. And like, that is a very reasonable thing to do with your pal. You're helping pick out a suit.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's an interesting depiction of how you can have some misinterpretations of things happen. And I think personally men tend to be more likely to jump to she wants to fuck me than like she's just being a nice person in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is a depiction of that where I'm watching it. And at no point did I think Keely wanted him to kiss her.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
And, like, yeah. I thought that that was quite clear.
Yeah.
And he like took that speech she gave instead of it being like, hey, we're in this together. Like we're going to be bosses someday. Right. Like that's how I heard it. Like,
yeah,
we're like the little underdogs and people underestimate us. And like, look at us. And he took it as like, I want to fuck you. And that's not the message, buddy.
Ugh, it's so uncomfortable. And I think one of the things I noticed this time too, is how quick I just think about someone like Keely and how like objectified she probably is in her life. And right after he kisses her, she's like, oh, it's okay. And it's like, no, it's not okay. Like, that's not, I mean, I get why she did that. Of course, I think if I had been in the same situation, I would have been like, oh, it's okay. Like, this doesn't have to be weird. But also, I think that feels like, to me, it feels additionally painful for her that he does that, that he misreads her so much. Because it just seems like that's how she's been treated her whole life so far. Why are you doing that? I don't know. It just really pisses me off.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not seeing her. Right. Like that scene opposed to the scene with Roy, where he is yeah. like, you look fucking cool, but also you are cool. And yeah. and X, Y, and Z. Right. I forget the words he uses, but like very, very much about who she is as a person. And yeah, like that, I hadn't thought about it that way at all. But that's a really good point that this is like extra unfortunate for her.
Yeah,
because of her story, and that this probably does happen all the time, and she's so accustomed to it that she goes, it happens all yeah. the time.
Yeah, she. I mean, I know she's not trying. I get why yeah. she's like trying to normalize it and stuff, but it feels like it just feels even worse that he like didn't honor her and his relationship with Roy, and just like all of the implications of making a choice like that just are so. Uncool, Nate. Uncool.
Yeah, not cool. And I did think it was weird that he went and spit in the mirror after that.
Gross.
I was like, I want to spit on you too.
Yeah. I mean, he's clearly trying to, like you said, take those confidence pep talks and step out on his own. And, you know, go for it in his way.
Well, and he does.
Yeah.
He does. And I mean, he goes for it in kissing her. And then we find out at the end of this episode that he also has made his move to go for it and be the boss. I would, that's how I read this. The fact that he revealed to Trent Crim that Ted had a panic attack. It's trying to discredit Ted. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also like, that was a pivotal moment for Nate, because that's when he took charge of the team and he got a lot of accolades for it. So it's like, he's trying to replicate that time again.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting watching how for each of these people, as they're going for it, like it's a very internally affected component, like they're internally affected by their decisions, right? Like, I mean, I guess Rebecca and Sam are going to impact each other, but it's like, it's for the best interest of them. And they're not necessarily hurting anyone by going for it. I mean, Sam maybe, I guess, is hurting the team, but it's not in the same way, not the way that Nate's is, like, actually, it's like the difference between like just walking up some stairs, like as you're ascending to the next level, versus like stepping on someone's head as you're walking up the stairs.
Yeah, that's a good metaphor for this. Yeah. 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 I mean, they're both doing things that happen. I'm sure, you know, Sam, like what you're saying about Sam, like considering going to another team is totally a thing that happens in sports, right? Like, it's like a normal thing. And, you know, probably moving on from being assistant coach to head coach or whatever they're called, manager, is also like a thing that happens. It's just that Nate's just doing things in destructive ways. It's like, he's not, yeah, just like you said, he's causing hurt and harm as he goes. And yeah, it's hard to watch.
He hasn't seemed to internalize the lessons from Ted in the way that everyone else in the team has, and everyone in Ted's sphere has.
Yeah. So it's and jarring. It's jarring when the way he behaves.
Yeah, it really is. It's the opposite of, like, you're like, you've been around, I don't know. I do think it's an interesting, like, examination of, as a leader, like, you can lead by example, you can create the psychological safety, you can do the things, and you get 98% of people on board. And then, like, I don't know, what do you do about that other person? Like, I don't know what else Ted could be doing.
Yeah. And we see him probably grappling with that in that last scene too, where Trent asks if he wants to comment and he says no comment. Like, I'm sure, you know, anybody who's been in a situation like that knows that it is difficult and you can't make everybody happy, but also it sucks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, right. I suppose there's a dot, dot, dot with Nate too.
Yep. And there's a big middle finger from me to him.
Did you have a favorite Tedism this episode?
I actually did have a favorite Tedism.
What is it?
When he's talking to Rebecca, he said a few things, and then he said, like, he goes, listen to your gut, and on your way down to your gut, check in with your heart. And I thought that was, I mean, it's such a Tedism, but I also think, like, what a great way to think about how you make decisions. Go with your gut and also listen to your heart. Good job, Ted.
You and I are really on sync. I wrote that one down too. But I'm also just going to amplify, you already said this one, but I'm also going to amplify how awesome Roy is when he looks at Keely and says, you look cool as fuck.
Yeah.
That's so hot. Great job. Yes. Great job, Roy. Like, and like you said, then he goes on to, like, listen to her and validate her feelings. Like, we, in both of these situations, we see really wonderful and flawed men showing up for women in ways that are really awesome for them. So thanks. Thanks, Roy and Ted. Thanks so much for listening to the PS Let's Talk Love podcast.
We want to send out a special thank you to Medium Build for our show music.
And if you enjoy this podcast, follow us anywhere you listen to podcasts. And if you want to support us, it's super helpful if you could give us a 5-star rating and leave us a review sharing what you're loving right now. Really, we want to know.
And if you don't like it and you got this far, don't worry. You do not have to listen to us again. You can just forget this podcast exists and move along.
You can catch up with us on Instagram at ps.welovelove or follow us on TikTok at psconsulting.
If you're interested in private coaching or learning more about our online classes, go to pscurators.com to learn more and find free resources to support you.
See you next time.